Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Wolverine 24/7 podcast, your audio source for all things Michigan football, basketball, and recruiting. I'm your host, Zach Shaw. Steve Lorenz is here with me. Check out all of our stories. We are writers first over at michigan.247sports.com, covering the Wolverines. And this podcast will discuss Michigan's 52-0 win over Rutgers. It is Michigan's most lopsided win since, surprise, a different time that they beat Rutgers, 78-0 in 2016. Actually, Michigan's first shutout since that game as well. It's been 37 games for all the talk about the defense. This was a really clean game, and we have lots of takeaways for those that are new to our post-game podcast. We do the 247, but we do two game balls, we do four lasting thoughts, and then seven questions. We fielded questions from the fans. We got our seven. We are ready to go. So first, game ball. Steve, I'll let you go first. Take your first shot. Who gets the game ball for you?
I think a lot of people will naturally talk about Patterson maybe feeling comfortable playing his best game of the year today. I thought this was a just as important day for Quiddy Pay going forward. He was a menace on the edge. And again, should we just do the whole make it clear? Yes, it is just Rutgers. I know I did this on Twitter earlier, but yes, I get it. For anybody who wants to try to discredit anything that Michigan did today, we understand the level of the opponent. But Pay had his best game of the season. I know he struggled against Wisconsin, but was consistently coming around the edge, made some great plays in the running game as well. And again, I think today was a lot about building confidence and going forward. And I think for Quiddy specifically, I think today was big. So he's getting my game ball after, like I said, playing his best game of the season, probably by far.
Yep, that's a good choice for the game ball. I'll take the obvious one, the natural one, Shea Patterson. Really, maybe his best game at Michigan. Again, okay, I'm not even going to do the caveat. I'm not even going to say it. I too understand who they played today, but it was his second highest completion percentage and second most yards. Felt like a couple of those rushing touchdowns, of course, were just Michigan had better offensive line and had better push, but felt like his decision making was really good. I actually have a little bit more of a takeaway on what Michigan did to help Patterson, but felt like he was seeing the field pretty well. Seemed like, you know, someone, I have the eye in the sky view. I don't have the TV view, and I was trying to keep track because that's obviously the knock on Shea is, you know, does he find the open guy? And I was trying to keep track during the game. Well, there's the guy that's open, and he's going to be open in half a second, kind of reading the routes and the plays a little bit. And pretty much every time Shea found him. Of course, you're not going to throw it to the most open person every single time, but felt like there was really good timing, really good plays. And I think there were two or three throws that weren't where they needed to be, but felt like he played really confident. Felt like he did a lot of things really well, and I think the results are, the proof is in the pudding. So, with the game balls done, let's go on to lasting takeaways. I'm going to go first with this one and try to cite some of the stuff after the game, talking to the players. There'll, of course, be lots of stories about this by myself, but Michigan got better this week. You know, opponent neutral, they looked cleaner, they played better assignment football. They were blocked. Even the technique, tackling for blocking and tackling, and you know, wrapping up, getting your arms in your hand placement, actually driving, you know, keeping your feet moving through the tackle or through the block. Just felt like they just were better. They were a better football team this week, and certainly confidence has a lot to do with that. If you go into a game expecting to win versus being on the road at Wisconsin, not sure what's going to happen, you know, that can be different. But no, the theme after the game, I know Cam McGrown mentioned this. I think Christian Turner mentioned this as well. Just the brick by brick. You know, they know that they can't beat Ohio State. They can't beat Ohio State today. They can't win the Big Ten today. They can't beat Michigan State. They can't go to Wisconsin and beat them today. They did what they had to do, and they did exactly what they should have done. Not just winning by a lot, right? Because we talked about this. What can Michigan do in this game? That was something we discussed on this podcast before the game. But even just playing crisp and you know, this was a pick-me-up game, and Michigan treated it as such, and really on both sides of the ball did not a perfect game, but on both sides of the ball did exactly what it was supposed to do. And so Rutgers will lose a lot of games, perhaps many by shutouts and by multiple touchdowns in the Big Ten. Iowa beat them 30-0, but I do think Michigan is a better team than they were this time last week. And really, this is the best game they've played all year. I am sure you can make a pretty sound argument that they should have brought it last week and that it doesn't really matter until they bring it against a different team, but they definitely got better. Steve, your lasting thought, I have it written down here, talent rises. What's sticking out to you in that regard?
Well, I know Harbaugh talked about both players after the game, but you know, guys like McGrone, Daxton Hill, kind of really getting their first major opportunity to shine in a legitimate game-type setting. Both did. McGrone with flying colors. Really, honestly, one of the craziest things I saw in the box score was McGrone actually only ended with one tackle and one quarterback hurry. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know how that's possible. It felt like his name was being called almost every, not almost every play, but consistently throughout. And again, it didn't take long to see him just, like the coach would always say, is to see him pop, you know, during the game as a guy that you can just tell definitely on a different level athletically. I know we had him as the number one outside linebacker in the country in the 2018 class. He definitely looked like a guy who's capable of, you know, becoming a star. I think Harbaugh said the exact same thing after his presser. So, you know, and the same with Hill. I think the natural question people sort of ask is, you know, how come we didn't see these guys earlier? I know with McGrone specifically, you know, I know that the flashes have been there in practice. I think consistency is more what they were looking for. But and so this is where a game like today is a good opportunity to maybe give a guy like him that legitimate opportunity, you know. And so and he took full advantage of it. So I would fully expect to see him on the field a lot against Iowa, you know, and that's what I think Michigan should do. I'm a big believer. I think we've talked about this before. I'm a big believer in if a guy's first real experience on the field is a highly positive one, that it can be a real springboard, both in confidence mentally and just in how they end up playing. And so I think for McGrone that today was a huge step forward for him. Just again, like I said, more from I know I can do this, you know, I'm more comfortable in my decision making and more comfortable in how athletic I am and in the plays that I'm making. I'm just comfortable on the field in this setting, you know. I think it was a really big deal. So, you know, again, Hill, a five star as well. McGrone, we had him, I think he was a borderline five star, you know. Seeing some of those young guys take advantage of their first real opportunity, you know, I think is great news for Michigan defensively as far as athletically especially, right? Even, honestly, even on offense, seeing Luke Schoonmaker, like, show the wheels. You know, I know he only had the one pass, but, man, he's a lot faster than I realized he was. I mean, that was a pretty impressive play for, you know, just a little out route or a little drag route from the tight end for him to turn it into a 29-yard gain, you know, I thought was pretty impressive. So, you know, seeing some of the younger guys not only get some playing time but taking full advantage of it, I think that's another byproduct you're looking for out of a game like this, and Michigan got it in a few important areas, in my opinion.
Yep, I agree, and I think it's when you look at this game and margin, all that aside, that's exactly what Michigan needs to see. Is maybe, I mean, that's, I'd be curious what former players would say about that, where you have a tough loss, you have a week that's critically important for people to step up. It kind of reminds me of basketball a few years ago when, you know, the John Beilein's whole outlier speech, where it's like, who's going to be an outlier the rest of the way? Because Michigan's going to need them. just on paper, it's a tough season. It's tough sledding. So they're going to need players to emerge and be better in October than they were in September and better in November than they were in October. So definitely sticking out to me. Another thing that stuck out to me, I think I'll see how I phrase this, but Michigan's going to make this offense work. I think they're going to find a way to make it work with Shea. You know, you saw today, we had a question about it, so we'll discuss it more in depth in a few moments, but Josh Gattis moved to the sidelines. Again, as I'm watching these routes develop, one thing I noticed is it seemed like they were more what I would call Shea routes. You know, it's less stuff on the sidelines. It's more stuff that he can kind of in his plane of sight. It's, you know, middle of the field, or if he's on the right hash, maybe it's more routes kind of in the on the right side of the field versus having to go sideline to sideline as you find these guys. Because everyone keeps saying, oh, throw it to Nico, he's wide open. Well, yeah, if you're behind 6'6" offensive linemen in the heat of the moment and there's someone barreling down at you and you're facing to the right and he's all the way to the left, I mean, you just might not see it. Your peripherals are worse when you're wearing a helmet. So I felt like they kind of, maybe not cleaned up, the route running or the route design improved. I think they found a good tempo. You know, one thing I was wondering is do they try to go slow and eat clock? Do they try to go fast and be kind of what Oregon was a while ago? I really wondered what the pace was going to be. I don't have an exact stat, but felt like whatever it was today worked. You know, guys were rotating in and out really efficiently. There were less, no one had to call a timeout because the play clock was winding down. There wasn't a, you know, mad scramble to get running back A or wide receiver B in the field and on the play. Seemed like a little bit less confusion, and I think that's natural throughout the season. Of course, it helps when you're working with the lead or playing in a game that's not on the road, but just seemed like they're making this offense more Shea friendly. You know, Shea Patterson is capable of a lot. He is not perfect. There are limitations that he has. I think Michigan is starting to kind of find that happy medium between getting Shea to change his game in one way, but also changing the offense to help him do what he does best. Felt like they had him going out of the pocket a little bit more, or moving pocket, I should say, you know, more rollout type play designs. And if that's what works for him, that's what Michigan has to do. They don't get to say, here's the offense, run it. They have to say, okay, what's the best offense for Shea Patterson to run? So that stuck out to me. Felt like Shea did well, but I also feel like the team put him in better position. Steve, you got a fourth thing that's sticking out to you?
Yeah, so we talked about on Thursday about this game being way more important for Michigan's own psyche than it was appeasing the fans and obviously the media who, you know, as I said to you before we recorded, you know, seemed to jump to want to make sure to let everybody know that it was just Rutgers they were playing. You know, God forbid you say anything positive about their performance today. I think like the impression I got, and honestly, actually, it was the quote I saw that Harbaugh said about backs being against the wall, that type of deal, and that got ridiculed. That's the position they are in, though. And that's where the national, you know, kind of storyline with Michigan is just, it's stupid. They still have all their goals in front of them. But another slip up like last Saturday, and it's probably all but over, barring something crazy. I mean, maybe if Notre Dame was the second loss and they went out in the Big Ten, maybe. But even then, though, the chances are slim and none, right, of doing anything nationally. So that's their mentality. And today was kind of that first step of, and it should be their mentality, by the way. It was their first step of, you know, again, you mentioned the brick by brick idea. You know, I think today was a success in that regard. And it appeared to be in the post-game stuff and the way that they approached today's game. Because, again, I mean, the alternative is they could have come out and looked I mean, there was never really a point where they looked sluggish necessarily. As, again, I think Michigan under Don Brown defensively, I think no matter who they've played, there's always maybe been a one or two drives.
Right.
Where they're, you know, that's just kind of history. So even in games where they've completely obliterated opponents, there's a couple drives where maybe look a little iffy or whatever, but that's...
It's been almost 3 years since they pitched a shutout on defense.
Right. So, so they did today. So, you know, the alternative, really, there was an alternative. could have been that they continued to struggle offensively. You know, because again, even against Middle Tennessee, there were some struggles. And, you know, I think by and large, I think they accomplished sort of, again, and we're not in the locker room, so we don't know. But, you know, from my viewpoint, and I'm assuming from your viewpoint as well, I think that they accomplished what we said was the goal on Thursday, which was to convince themselves, or, you know, sort of a rebound game and a confidence. It's not so much physically or on the field, but maybe even mentally, especially for somebody like Patterson and really the defensive unit as a whole. And so, like you said, with not many misses, the assignment football was better, which, again, it doesn't matter who you're playing. Assignment football is assignment football. You know, if you're missing on those assignments, making mistakes, it'll show, you know, even if you're playing a team like Rutgers. So, I think, like I said, I think overall, I think Michigan probably accomplished what we said on Thursday would, what we thought maybe should be their goal for this game. And again, that's all you can do right now. You can't do anything else.
Right.
You can only go out there on Saturday and do what you can, you know, do what you think you need to do. And if you do it, okay, now you move on. You got Iowa next week. So, that's where I'm at on that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Agreed. Let's go on to questions. 7 questions, of course, in the future. If you ever want to get a question in, shoot me a tweet or message after the game, and I'll try to add to the list. Let's go first, Linda Mulig, who says, still wasn't a great rushing day against a greatly overmatched team. What needs to happen there other than running Zach until he's injured again? The game had to give play. Oh, yeah. So more about the confidence. But yeah, the run game, that is absolutely one area where it's hard to envision if Michigan can't even break 3.5 yards per carry against Rutgers. I don't know how many games that they can really count on the offense to win or provide some offense this year. So, Zach Charbonnet still seemed like he was limited. Maybe I'm wrong there, but 5 carries, feel like maybe it was, they were keeping him out there, but maybe having him take it easy with an eye on the rest of the games in the schedule. Christian Turner, he was solid, 11 carries, 48 yards and a score. Hassan Haskins had that one run for 15 yards that looked pretty good, but still don't know if he's someone that they're throwing out there against some of the bigger, more notable teams. Steve, what are you seeing in this run game? Is this something that can be fixed, or are they just going to have an okay run game this year and just deal with the consequences that come?
It's hard. Talking anything regarding offensive line play is always difficult to do immediately after the game if you haven't kind of maybe watched it again to watch it a little bit closer. Mm-hmm. You know, I still wonder, again, we talked about what they needed to do today, but you still kind of wonder how much they could still get away with not showing a lot either. And it has been surprising, though, in short yardage situations. I sometimes wonder if it's a little more about predictability than it is the line not doing their job. There were a lot of unbalanced plays as far as, you know, basically Rutgers put, what, 9 guys in the... That's why do you think the bootleg worked so well all day, right? I mean, Rutgers sold out in the middle of the middle, and Michigan, you know, was able to make them pay in those short yardage situations. But as far as, yeah, handing the ball off, running the ball up, I thought when Michigan tried to run the ball in like basic scenarios, I thought they were all right. I think the biggest issue, again, yeah, was like a few short yardage situations where I felt like maybe it was a little bit too predictable. And then that's when they were able to pull the string with those bootlegs and score a few touchdowns. I mean, what, they have 3 touchdowns on bootlegs today, right? I mean, Patterson had 2, yeah, yeah, and Milton had the last one. So, again, though, that's more of a rewatch type deal to see. I'm hard pressed. Like, you know, Runyon is a better run blocker than a pass blocker. Onwenu is a better run blocker than a pass blocker. I'm just, it's hard to imagine that you're not going to see the running game continue to get better. I actually liked what Haskins did today. I don't know if that's going to, I don't know if that turns into like a bigger role or anything like that, but I thought he looked pretty solid. I mean, he's a guy that can move the pile a little bit. You know, he had I think he also had a catch on the outside that was called back because of a penalty. But You know, I liked what I saw from him, you know, and again, like I said, could mean nothing, but, you know, especially with Wilson also back too, you know, is I don't know if they're not going to get four different guys the ball every game. And, you know, I don't think, but positive step for him today, I thought. So, again, much more of a, again, I know we're doing this podcast like 3 hours after the game's over, but I feel like dissecting the running game is more of a Tuesday, Wednesday answer than it is a Saturday, Sunday answer.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're right. And I'll certainly do the film review. I think I'm going to try to do that for every Big Ten game they play this year. I got some positive feedback from the last one. As far as the run game goes, I think they're in a weird spot because I think you mentioned Onwenu and Runyon and throw Bredesen and Ruiz in there as far as run blockers who really thrive in power schemes. I know they did zone last year. I know they've done zone this year. I don't know if that's them identity-wise. But the problem is you don't necessarily want to switch out of it because your offensive play sets, if you're trying to have any sort of deception, you got to do the zone blocking, I feel like. Maybe I'm wrong there, but so that's where I wonder in the short yardage situations, could they crack open a few power play calls that just are more what this team jives with? I do think I you wonder about how much they're showing. I don't necessarily as much that, but I do wonder how much they're holding Charbonnet and Wilson back.
Right.
Where, you know, how much do you really need them in a game like this? And, like, you still want to give them reps. You still want them to play. It's not really worth holding them out for another week. But maybe you just give them really simple play calls. You give Charbonnet 5 carries, not trying to have him carry the ball 25 times. So what can they do? Probably keep working on blocking. And one thing I feel like big element to zone rushing or zone blocking and the running game is seeing and recognizing the holes and making the right decision. That's where Michigan not having a veteran running back really hurts. You know, that's where Charbonnet and Christian Turner, they're still growing. They're still learning that sort of thing. So I don't think there's any light switch, quick fix, you know, easy button deal. Got to get better at blocking. Probably have to design it better. Probably have to get comfortable with rushing in this kind of scheme. And then the running backs have to be better at all the things that they need to do as running backs. So sorry, Linda, that's not the best answer. But I do think I don't think there's one small thing that would fix everything. I think it's got to be a collective, multifaceted approach. Next question. Blaze asks, how much of an impact do you think it made having Gattis on the sideline? His energy seemed contagious, and he was in players' ears every time they came to the sideline. So I had the eye in the sky, so I didn't necessarily get to see the energy component. But talking to the players after the game, we talked to Christian Turner, we talked to Donovan Peoples-Jones, and Shea Patterson from the offensive side of things. Shea seemed really excited. He seemed to really like it, and that makes sense. You know, he has to communicate with his OC all the time. It's probably easier on him to, you know, instead of through the phone or through the walkie, it's just right next to him on the sidelines. And you can probably say more, right? And so I think it really helps with the quarterbacks. I did see a few video clips where the energy seemed to be there. Perhaps that helps. I wonder, I'd love to hear his perspective of what he sees. Does he see things differently? Because there are perks to being up high. You see the whole field. You can, you know, have a sense for depth and the routes and what's open, what the all 22 of what Rutgers is doing. But I've always been a big believer that if you're a play caller, you know, even high school, I've always been fascinated by teams that do play calling from up top. I'm sure it works. I'm sure it works in a lot of places, but I've always been a big believer in that you want to, especially your quarterback, you want to have that conversation face to face. So I think it was I think it was notable. I don't think it's an irrelevant thing. I think it did make an impact. And again, if the players respond well to it, that's all that matters. Really, I mean, you want your players to be as confident and as happy and as excited about it as possible. So, yeah, I'd say if I were Michigan, I'd keep it going.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Yep, no, I agree. I told you I was going to defer on that one to you because I feel like that's a much easier question to answer when you actually were there to get the answers from the guys. I mean, from my standpoint, when they looked as crisp as they did, you know, you want to point to that as making a difference, but it's hard to really know. You know, it could have been more like what you talked for all I know, it could have been more what you talked about earlier as far as, you know, putting him in a better position offensively, you know, is why they would have succeeded at that level. So, but then again, you know, he's going to be on the sidelines again next Saturday, right? So they're not going to change. I don't think they're going to go back on it. I mean, it had to have worked to some extent. So,
okay, next question. This one comes from Aunt Troya, who asks, will pick plays ever be called this year? Why doesn't Michigan do more pick plays if it never gets called? So I didn't actually, when he first asked, I you know, as someone who doesn't watch on TV and doesn't hear, and maybe I'm on social media, I'm interacting, but kind of focused on my deal and covering the game. Steve, what did you see? I think you said there was like a third down pick play that seemed pretty egregious. I guess, what's your take on this question? And then maybe some of the non-calls that occurred today.
I mean, there were a few. There was the one that was really bad, though, that I think it was a third. Somebody can correct me if I'm wrong. I don't have full recollection, but I believe it was a third down play. Either way, it was a first down conversion for Rutgers either way. You know, it was obvious. And I think the play either before or after, McGrone was held as well, which again, whatever, refs, you know, miss calls. But my thing with the pick play, I agree, we talk about why does Michigan not run them? I don't know. I mean, teams run it. I feel like it's got to be called. By the way, the call would just be a straight up offensive pass interference if it's properly seen and the flag is thrown. I believe offensive pass interference is the call in that situation. I know it is in the pros. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, you could just chalk it up to some missed calls by the referees. I don't know. I know other teams have used it against Michigan. My thought is that every team would just do that every play or would do it way more frequently if it worked every time. You know, and you know, at the end of the day, what do we have Rutgers through for? Yeah, it was 106 yards on 24 attempts. That's what? A little over 4-5 yards. Yeah,
they needed more pick plays.
Yeah, you know, and again, at least one of those looks like, yeah, Blackshear's long reception was 17. I'm thinking that was the yardage they gained on that. Was on a play where, yeah, a penalty absolutely should have been called. So, you know, again, I know people immediately want to look towards the end of the year with who they play as far, you know, because that's what Ohio State did last year to dominate Michigan on the defensive side of the ball. But, you know, I don't know. I thought Michigan did a pretty good job against it, all things being considered. And I just think there were a couple of hiccups there on the officiating. I mean, it might not be, you know, no more, no less, right? So And I don't know if – I don't believe Michigan run – I mean, I know they run crossing patterns, but, yeah, there are a few teams that I guess the more you think, the more in the conference that have kind of – I know Northwestern always seemed to be a team that Michigan would face that would run a ton of those types of patterns. We talked about Ohio State. So, you know, it's just something that they'll have to – You know, after every game, I know you can go through the film, and they send plays to the Big Ten, you know, so I don't know if that'd be a play they'd consider sending or, you know, it only get that stuff only gets publicized when there's like a horribly, egregiously missed call in a big point of the game. But I believe every week there's like there's somebody on staff that goes through the game film and like sends plays to the official, the Big Ten headquarters or whoever to review and to watch for or something going forward. So
Yeah, good question. Yep.
I mean, it's a fair question because that was a horribly missed call. I mean, it was obvious that the crossing offensive player for Rutgers clearly impeded. It wasn't like an unintentional type deal. I mean, the play was obviously designed for that to happen, and I didn't feel like the Rutgers guy made much of an effort to make it look accidental either, you know. And it's the only reason the pass was completed. So fair gripe on that individual play. I just, the refs just flat out missed it. I mean, there's no other way to really put it.
There we go. Glad I deferred to you on that one. The next one, Savage Beast asks, did you notice any lingering injury effects from Shea, or is he mostly healed? My inclination is that this kind of sounds like a tongue in cheek question because, you know, they keep putting him out there and he plays full games. It's, you know, it's clearly not an injury that's limiting what he can do. Seemed healthy to me. We just mentioned maybe his best game at Michigan. I know some people have kind of poked the bear a little bit about the, oh, Shea's hurt. So that's why I thought it might be a tongue-in-cheek question. Seemed healthy to me. Steve, was there any shots of Shea, you know, holding his rib or keeled over or anything? I mean, he didn't really get hit very much at all in this game, but anything you noticed from the TV broadcast?
No, I didn't see anything that would indicate that he wasn't at 100%. So
okay.
It seemed like a simple question to me. Yeah, you like you said, yep. Could have been somebody trying to have some fun, which I kind of chuckled at the question too. But if you're being serious, no, I didn't see anything that indicated that he wasn't at full strength. I guess maybe the pessimist would say he still didn't really keep on like a true zone read. Most of any of his runs were on the bootleg type situations. He did improvise on his second touchdown run, you know, for a short dive into the end zone, but still didn't really keep the ball in any of the read type situations. But again, I don't think that's a tangible deal that he's hurt or that he wasn't at 100%. I just think, like I said, mm-hmm. I really think they want to just kind of maybe work on some tweaks on the interior running game, some basics.
Yep. He was hesitant on that one run play that you mentioned that he improvised.
True.
And ended up diving. It did take him. That was maybe one of the few plays in the game where I remember watching and thinking, well, he should do that. And then it actually took a while for him to do that. So who knows? Maybe if it was tongue in cheek, let us know because we just embarrassed ourselves. This question should be pretty easy. Williams Tonneson says he wants to know the real story behind the Arthur Sitkowski recruitment. I didn't listen to the broadcast. What was said, and then what is the actual story?
Yeah, I think they kept saying that Sitkowski chose Rutgers over Michigan. I mean, it was pretty what I would call basic deal. I can't remember what cycle he was, but I think it was the same cycle they took Peters.
Well, he was a true freshman last year.
Maybe, yeah, I'm sorry. He was an 18, wasn't he? Okay. Basically, yeah, 18. So I want to say he visited Michigan. So he had a verbal scholarship offer. I believe he had visited Michigan, and I think at the time some crystal balls had come in because Michigan was ready to – I believe there was a short point in time where they would have taken him, but I want to say things change at the satellite camp at Paramus Catholic where I don't think they were really that impressed with what they saw. They backed off pretty quickly, actually, and a lot of other schools did as well. Again, none of this is to – these are just facts, not saying anything negative about Sikowski or anything like that. And he ended up at Rutgers. I mean, it's really – Michigan kind of cooled off, backed away, and he signed with Rutgers. You know, and that's – like I said, I actually appreciate BTN trying to, like – I think the broadcast would be more interesting if people knew, like, the recruiting backgrounds of some of their players. Like, I know I mentioned Bo Melton for Rutgers is a guy that Michigan really actually liked at the time. K'Ron Adams, who got a lot of – I think he got 5 or 6 carries late in the game. Yeah, he got 7 carries in the fourth quarter for Rutgers, a true freshman running back. Michigan very nearly offered him at the end of last cycle. You know, and so I think it's cool when they try to get – recruiting talk involved in the game. Like I said, I think it makes it a little more interesting, but it was not accurate. You know, and I got the impression the way it was explained on air was that that's the way that the Sitkowski family may have made it kind of sound like. And again, okay. I'm not saying anything negative about anybody. I'm just saying the fact is that's the fact. So that's the way that played out. Michigan, he had a scholarship offer for a while. Michigan backed off way before he signed with Rutgers and was not a factor on their terms at that point. Otherwise, I think he'd have verbaled to Michigan pretty early in the process if Michigan would have let him. So pretty simple.
For those curious, yeah, couple quick things. And again, we're not trying to, not trying to make it a big thing, but.
No, because no quarterback would succeed with an offensive line like what Rutgers had out there today. I mean, I felt bad for him watching the game. I mean, it's like he had no time to do anything back there at all. So,
well, and you noticed Harbaugh went out of his way to commend Sitkowski.
Right, as he should, in my opinion.
Yeah, but he fell 246 spots in 24/7's rankings throughout his high school tenure. Falling to 471. He also committed to the U, Miami, at one point. Did not work out, or, you know, decommitted, ended up at Rutgers. And then also Zach Anikstead beat him out for the starting job at IMG. Anikstead is, I think he's hurt right now, but he's a quarterback at Minnesota. So more details to the story. Next question. Brandon Pisarski asks, all the positive signs today obscured the fact that there was still little push from the middle of both sides of the line. This has got to be the number one make or break area for this team. Yes or no? Yeah. I mean, you know, we mentioned the run blocking just wasn't a super effective run game for Michigan. I feel like the defensive line made a big push. I still think that's the main concern for Michigan moving forward, but I felt like they did well today. I mean, that was Chris Ash's main takeaway, was talking about how the defensive line looked really good. Steve, I don't know. Do you have any thoughts there on both the offensive line and defensive line? Got to think if Michigan's going to be successful, they need at least probably between the O-line and the D-line, probably 4 players to be first or second team all Big Ten, maybe more. So they are going to need them to be better than they were today. But what did you think about the push with the interior on both sides today?
I thought, again, another player I think that today was really important for was Michael Dwumfor. There was this. You know, the new thing to complain about, and again, rightfully so after last, you know, to some extent. Because, like, I think you talked about it last Sunday. It was like, Carlo Kemp did not play that badly against Wisconsin. Was he great? No. But I still think, you know, looking back at that game, it may have been more schematic than it was a unit, like, failing particularly up front. Now, again, that being said, yes, Michigan needs more up front in the middle on the defensive line. But that's why I think today was a really big day for Michael Dwumfor to get, you know, some legitimate reps. He's barely played this year, and he's the guy I think everyone's considered their best player in the middle. You know, the new thing is to complain about Chris Hinton, Mazi Smith not getting a bunch of playing time. I think, like I said, I think I posted this on the board. I think, in you know, my opinion, it was much more important to get Dwumfor as many healthy snaps as you possibly could, because he's going to be more important to them going forward. Not saying that should they throw those guys out there maybe a little bit, or should they have thrown them out a little bit earlier, because, you know, Hinton did get in very late. Maybe. I can see the argument, particularly with, I don't believe Jeter, I don't, did he even play? I don't even think he played today. He's definitely not on the, no, he's not in the box score at all. But, you know, it's whatever. And on the offensive line, I just, there's too much talent, too much experience for them to not continue to get better there. So, but it, of course it's, I mean, this is a game that is won in the trenches, right? I mean, that's kind of always been the case. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I thought, I thought mostly positive. I don't really see how the defensive line in particular did not get any. I thought they got pretty decent push. I mean, Rutgers ran for what, 30 yards?
Like 35? Yeah, 46.
Yeah, 46 yards. And only 11 of those were negative. You know, take away the sack adjusted, so that what, they had 57.
I have them down for 60 sack adjusted rushing yards on 2.2 yards per carry.
Okay,
so they weren't
really
going anywhere.
Right. Yeah. And their whole, you know, Rutgers' whole scheme offensively was, well, that dink and dunk stuff, which makes it hard for a defensive front to, like, what, to get push in the passing game is going to be difficult, right? So I thought defensively they were fine, and I thought today, like I said, was important for Dwumfor. Offensively, like I said, I just think as the year continues, it's just hard not to imagine that unit's not going to get a lot better across the board. You know, I don't know if it's a feeling out process with the new scheme or what, but again, four all Big Ten guys returning, you know, you'd expect to see them start to play like it at some point. So again, offensive line questions, like we said, tough to answer 3 hours after the game. Much more of a reviewy type, you know, question that can't really be answered, in my opinion, at this point.
Sure. Yeah, one thing about the offensive line that I would add is that I wonder if fans and media and maybe even the team itself maybe overhyped the offensive line last year, because it did struggle in a lot of games. But I would also say it got better throughout the season. And it was kind of September turned to October. That was about when things started to click last year. In theory, four returning starters means that you don't have to go through that process again.
Sure.
But the battle rhythm, the kind of rhythm of the season, how serious things get, I could see the line still getting better. I guess try to give Brandon an answer that isn't, we don't know. I could very much see the offensive line getting better just because they're practicing, they're going through game film, they're correcting. Spring practices can be valuable. I don't know if they can be valuable for the offensive line. I think that's a hard position to really say, ah, yes, this was a good practice in the spring. I mean, you almost have to have some game film get blown up a little bit. Still, valuable question. Interesting thing that I will keep an eye on when I do my film review. Last question, Jordan Eggleston asked, when Ross is healthy, is it time to have him and McGrone on the field together? Mentions Glasgow could maybe stay off the field a little bit. Certainly looked like Cameron McGrone made a nice pitch for more playing time. I think that's without question.
That's one way to put it, right? I mean, I think he made a solid statement today, obviously.
Yeah, and Glasgow at the same time probably had his worst game of the season. So, Steve, we're four games in. We're a third of the way through the season. I almost think you go with McGrone and Glasgow, but I would keep an eye on if our team's able to pick on Glasgow a little bit more. Are they able to scheme and recognize. Because what Glasgow does is, I mean, he delivers with plays. You know, box scores are a bad way to evaluate players, but he has a lot of tackles and he has a lot of sacks and he has made plays. You know, kind of sometimes you just need your gamers out there. Whereas Ross, maybe I'm not looking at what he's doing enough. Feel like he's been so-so. Like through the first three games, I think most people would have said Glasgow outperformed Josh Ross. So you got to go with who's performing the best. I'd put McGrone out there as much as you can, though. I think he adds the, no one's going to replace Devin Bush. We've said that a million times, but he has a little bit of that to his game, and he can add that element, close out some angles. Makes me wonder, could he have played a little bit? I know he played a decent amount against Wisconsin, had one really bad missed tackle, but could he have made a little bit more of a dent in Wisconsin's offense? So yeah, he should play a lot. Ross versus Glasgow, I don't know. Probably
could be
Ross.
Could be matchup dependent. I mean, true. You know, you get to the point where if you have enough guys you believe in, you can start to it just naturally creates versatility. So I mean, if they, because I agree. I mean, there's no doubt. Like we said, Michigan pitched a shutout today, but Glasgow definitely had his roughest game of the year. But he was also arguably one of their what would we say top two or three defensive players before today, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, he, you know, was one of the only guys that really I think has brought it consistently. So I you know, McGrone's emergence can only be a good thing. I think you still have to believe that the staff is going to put their best 11 on the field in any whatever given scenario or whatever given opponent they're playing. But yeah, McGrone, just like I said earlier, just has that pop where you can just tell, like, okay, this guy's got real potential. We knew that. We've known that. But he really, we finally got to see it firsthand today in a legitimate situation.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So to make that long answer short, yeah, McGrone's got to be on the field. And then I agree, a little matchup dependent. And just who's clicking, you know? They're in practice. They spend, what, I mean, their full-time job is to look at the linebackers in practice and decide who's going to play. You know, maybe there are times where it's Glasgow and Ross instead of McGrone. Maybe, you know, I don't think any of the three are perfect, you know, first-team All-Big Ten players. So certainly room enough to rotate. And I think that's something we expected maybe a little bit more in fall camp. I know there was one guy on Twitter that was like, oh, another year where they overhyped everyone at fall camp. We haven't seen much of Cam McGrone yet. And it's like, oh, well, here he is now. So
Ronnie Bell.
Yeah, but McGrone is a true linebacker. That's one thing to keep in mind. I don't know how much linebacker in high school Jordan Glasgow played. I think he was more safety. So that's something to keep in mind, too. We'll see. My personal opinion, yeah. Yeah, I think Glasgow had a rough game, and I wonder if teams are going to be able to pick on him in matchups and putting people in motion, and because he has to take different angles than McGrone or Josh Ross would take. Anyway, those were our seven questions. Thank you for submitting them. This has been the Wolverine 24/7 podcast. Check out all of our stories. Lots of post-game coverage coming. TheMichiganInsider.com, Michigan.247Sports.com. Michigan, I think we both are in agreement, took a step forward today. They didn't get to the finish line. They aren't, no one's holding up a trophy for shutting out Rutgers. But as far as if you go back to our Thursday podcast and go over what Michigan had to do, it was a pivotal week just for the psyche of the season. Michigan needed to respond, and by all accounts, they did. This has been the Wolverine 24/7 podcast for Steve Lorenz. I'm Zach Shaw. Hope you had fun. Hope you learned something. And we'll talk to you later on this week.